KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, it's mostly clear and 38 degrees in Atlantic. We look for it to be sunny and breezy today. A high of 55 with winds out of the south-southwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour, gusting up to 25. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. The news is brought to you this hour by Cass County Health System, Cass County Memorial Hospital in Atlantic. Republican Congressman Steve King has long been an advocate of building a wall along the southern U.S. border.
You can probably expect to see construction begin in the 2017 season.
That's because President-elect Donald Trump made building the wall a cornerstone issue in his campaign. King, as you may recall, ran an earth-moving company before he was elected to Congress. On Wednesday, he tweeted a picture of what he described as a simple, efficient, and cost-effective design for the wall.
He wants to make it beautiful. And I say, let me build it. I'll make it work. I'll make it big. You worry about beautiful. We can have a good wall.
King says it won't take the Republican-led Congress long to put the wheels in motion, since there's already money set aside for a wall in some segments of the border. But King says Congress will have to plow more money into the project in January. In 2006, King went on the floor of the U.S. House with a replica of a 12-foot-high border wall he envisioned. This past week, President-elect Trump suggested he'd agree to a fence rather than a wall in some sections of the nearly 2,000-mile-long border. The federal government has already spent $7 billion erecting fencing along more than 600 miles, or about one-third of the border. Improving water quality in the state has been a big topic of discussion this year, and there are already several projects underway testing different methods to improve the runoff from farm fields. Shane Wolf is the project coordinator of the Miller Creek Watershed Project in southern Blackhawk and northern Tama counties. It's one of the eight initial demonstration projects funded by the State Water Quality Initiative.
We are trying to show off these practices, working with some, proactive producers that put these practices on the ground in high visibility areas. And then it's an opportunity for us to have field days, workshops at these practices to show them off to maybe some of your more traditional producers.
He says they have three categories they work with.
Management practices, something like putting a cover crop out there, no-till, strip-till, some of these different practices that are actually out in the field. Then we also work with some nutrient management practices like nitrogen application rate management, nitrification inhibitors that slow down the process of converting over to nitrate, which is eventually can be lost through the water. And then also edge of field practices, which I'd probably argue is probably the most innovative new practices that are out there.
One of those edge of field practices is called a denitrifying bioreactor.
That sounds kind of complicated, but it's essentially just a big pit of wood chips that's tiles rerouted into, and water flows through and basically comes out on the other end with a reduced number of nitrate concentration.
Wolf says the goal is to explain how the process works.
All the practices I'd say are pretty straightforward, but the thing is, some of our producers are pretty darn traditional, so it takes a while to, it's a big change in your operation. So that's why we want to make sure we demonstrate as well as we can and work with them to show that the practices are effective, for reducing nitrates and phosphorus, but then also to be cost-effective as well.
Wolf says many of the things they are using have been tested at Iowa State University, and they're following up to be sure they work in the fields.
We are doing local water monitoring with the Iowa Soybean Association. So biweekly, I go out and grab tile samples, water samples from in-stream, and then also from some of those edge-of-field practices, the bioreactors and saturated buffers you can collect directly from those practices as well.
The Miller Creek watershed covers some 42,000 acres and is 81% planted in row crops. The faculty union plans to prepare a post-visit evaluation of the four presidential finalists scheduled to be on the University of Northern Iowa campus in Cedar Falls next week. Union President Joe Gorton says the analysis being done by the Presidential Search Committee won't be enough to provide a definitive statement about who the faculty thinks should be the next president. The last finalist is scheduled to visit campus December 2nd, and the search committee is scheduled to meet with the Iowa Board of Regents on the morning of December 5th. The regents are expected to select the new president during their December 5th and 6th meeting in Cedar Falls. Former President Bill Rood left the university this summer to become president at a small college in Marietta, Ohio. Authorities in Des Moines yesterday released the name of a man who was fatally shot in a parking lot. Police identified him as 20-year-old DeBrian Smith, who lived in Des Moines. Officers were sent to a convenience store parking lot at around 6:45 p.m. Thursday. Some people there reported being shot at and that one of them had been struck. He was taken by private vehicle to Broadlawn's Medical Center. No arrests have been reported. Authorities say an 18-year-old has died after falling or leaping out of a moving vehicle at the southwest side of Burlington. The Des Moines County Sheriff's Office said in a news release that the young man landed on the roadway at around 1 a.m. Thursday and was later taken by private vehicle to a hospital in West Burlington. He was then transferred to the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City, where he died. The man was identified as Clayton Connolly, who lived in Burlington. The Sheriff's Office didn't provide other key details about the circumstances surrounding Connolly's death. Dog owners in Iowa are being urged to have their pets vaccinated for the canine influenza virus, or CIV, which was reported in more than 40 states in the past year, including Iowa. Veterinarian Dr. Natalie Marks says the so-called dog flu quickly caused an epidemic in 2015, and it's hoped that prevention can prevent it from spreading again this year. The symptoms are much like human flu.
CIV is respiratory in dogs, so we see coughing, sneezing, runny nose, runny eyes, lethargy and fever, and in more severe cases, we can see a pretty bad pneumonia.
In the worst cases, it can be fatal, but Marks says there is a way to inoculate against the two strains.
There's vaccination for both the original strain of flu, which was H3N8, and now there is an H3N2 specific strain, both very safe and effective, and we encourage all pet owners out there to talk to their veterinarian about their dog's lifestyle risks and if the vaccine is appropriate for your dog's vaccination protocol.
CIV is highly contagious and can be spread quickly in urban areas, doggy daycares, boarding facilities, dog parks, and sporting events. The dog flu is a problem year-round, especially during warmer months, as pets are outdoors more often and more likely to encounter other dogs if they are social. Good weather conditions have led to healthy populations of animals trapped in Iowa for their fur. DNR fur bearer biologist Vince Evelsizer said one animal in particular has flourished.
Raccoon numbers are especially high this year. All populations of the fur bearers are stable to slightly increase this year, doing well and fine, except for the gray fox is a little bit low.
He's hoping trappers will help to manage the raccoon populations.
Raccoon numbers are extremely high, so we encourage plenty of trapping and harvest of them.
He says trappers should be aware that there has been some distemper in raccoons, and there are some signs the animals may be infected.
They may encounter raccoons out during the daylight moving around and usually kind of seem to be stumbling or staggering around, oblivious to their surroundings. If they encounter them, it's good to go ahead and dispatch them.
And Evelsizer said you should take a few precautions for animals which might be infected.
Handle them with gloves and just use common sense when handling them. It has not been found to transfer to humans.
Information from the DNR shows the raccoon harvest has varied greatly depending on the price paid for their pelts. The harvest hit an all-time high of $390,877 in the 1986-87 season, but that declined rapidly in the next 3 years to $103,468 as fur prices dropped. The harvest went back up in the 2010-2011 season to nearly $237,000 as pelt prices increased, but dropped off to $89,000 last year as the fur prices dropped once again. The average raccoon pelt price last year was $4.53, which was about half of what it was the year before. The news was brought to you by Cass County Health System, Cass County Memorial Hospital in Atlantic. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.